Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barclay Ponders Out Loud podcast. Instructional coaches and leaders create the environment that supports teachers to continually imagine, grow, and achieve. They model an excitement for learning that teachers in turn model for students. This podcast is dedicated to promoting the important aspects of instructional leadership. Thanks for listening. Expanding inclusive learning environments. Joining us on the podcast today is Dr. Gretchen Stewart. Gretchen is the founder of an upcoming school, Smart Moves Academy. Her dissertation research involved working with worldwide experts in the area of brain development, learning cognition, movement, leading to the identification of 27 elements that experts felt should be included in an exclusive school where movement is a central part of how all students maximize learning. Gretchen, thanks so much for giving us your time here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure.
Would you start off by sharing a little bit of your background and what led to your study and the founding of Smart Moves Academy?
Sure, absolutely. Well, Steve, I have spent, 20 years now in public education. I've taught in urban schools in Minneapolis and Atlanta. I've taught in charter schools in St. Paul. So I've worked in general education and special education as a teacher and administrator at levels K-12. So I've had a pretty extensive career in education, and I'm also a parent. So 15 years ago, I became a parent to a wonderful young man who was later diagnosed with autism. And, throughout my time in education, and then, definitely as being on the other side, kind of the table as a parent then, and being involved in special education, I just always felt that, there are things that we can be doing differently. There are things that we might be able to be doing better. I've always been drawn to like these big, massive, complex problems in education. In the environmental education world, they call these problems wicked problems because they're just so entangled with many variables. So like the persistent achievement gap in the United States between socioeconomic levels, between students with learning differences and students without, those problems have persisted for generations. And those are things that I've been drawn to because as myself as a teacher, as a teacher educator, I just see our schools and our teachers and our administrators putting everything we have at solving these problems, but yet they persist. So those are kind of the impetus for me going and getting my PhD and then founding this new school.
So Gretchen, a lot of our listeners are instructional coaches working in classrooms with teachers and school administrators. Can you talk about some of the things that they should be encouraging teachers to implement in their classrooms based on what we know about the brain and movement and learning?
Absolutely. And I love instructional coaches. I've been a senior instructional coach for the last 3 years, focusing on inclusive practices, high leverage strategies, and bringing my own flavor to that with movement, the brain, learning, and cognition. So what I would say to an instructional coach after you've obviously observed the environment is to see where you can create some more opportunities for movement. And this is at any developmental age, any grade level. Our makeup, our biophysiological makeup wants to move. It wants to be active. And so actually the moment that we sit down, there are chemicals in our brain that are telling our brain to go to sleep. So a lot of schools have instituted things called like brain breaks where kids will get up for 2 minutes and then sit down. But I'm saying that we need to go beyond that. So instructional coaches helping teachers figure out how to get more movement out of their school day. So like transitions is a great area. There's a lot of schools that have things on the hallway floors now. They call them, I think, a sensory path where students will, for younger students, hop, jump, skip, crawl, take their hands and move them along the wall while counting or whatever. that's a great thing to institute. And you can do that inside of a classroom. There's a lot of ideas around that that you could use. If a teacher doesn't, if they all have just chairs as the seating option, I would absolutely recommend that you help that teacher, whether by going to administration or whatever you need to do, get some different seating options that move. So there's school chairs that rock. There are bouncy balls. There are items that you can put onto a desk so kids can swing their feet. And I would also say that standing up, and Steve, you know, with the pandemic, we've seen a lot of people work at home, a lot of school at home, and we've seen actually in the retail world, the demand for standing desks has gone kind of through the roof. So helping kids be able to stand up to do things, using clipboards to make that happen if you don't have standing desks in your classroom. And the instructional coach too, I would say too, that if you could help that teacher figure out how to move their lesson more versus standing at the front, or even if they're using station teaching, helping them figure out how to add movement to that.
I know that that COVID led schools, as they opened back up, to be doing more learning outside. You see that as a benefit and an element we ought to be trying to hold on to more?
Absolutely. When I did my dissertation and I had these 40 experts from around the world, they came up with these 27 elements that a school that was focused on embodied learning or optimizing brain performance through movement would have. And one of the top things was creating outdoor space for learning that encourages movement and adding to recess time, adding to playtime. So that falls definitely in line with what is recommended. And, you know, so when you take the class outside, don't just go outside and sit down. Try to, you know, it's great. That's great just being outside, but actually taking that class outside and adding some elements of movement. If you're just getting started, maybe before the actual lesson happens, you play a movement game, you play a team movement game, or you just give students little short movement assignments like striking poses or playing red light, green light. That's a really simple game that involves movement.
Great. Gretchen, I wondered if you'd talk about some strategies we ought to be increasing or implementing in our schools to increase the inclusive practices that are needed to increase success for all learners. And I'm wondering if you might give it to us from two vantage point. What are some of the, quote, kind of easily doable things that just maybe take a difference in our thinking? And then what are some things that are perhaps a little more complex and things that we ought to be working towards, you know, kind of the changes that you think we should be looking to bring into our schools?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, my focus is going to be movement. So I think that it's a good place to start. So taking it from the maybe just the immediate, what you can do in your classroom or what coaches can help teachers do is, you know, it's been over the years that, you know, a signal of being on task is that your physical body is kind of in a small space and you're quiet and you're looking at the thing and you're being on task. That's totally contrary really to a lot of students who have identified learning differences. And a lot of we're seeing a lot more, even kids without labels that have issues with attention and sitting still and all of those things. It's prevalent. So, you know, I would say if you could just take a step one degree to the right, and realize that being on task and being engaged doesn't necessarily or doesn't usually mean that you're seated and quiet. Being on task can look very different for every child in your classroom. And if we can take that perspective shift, I think that we can make environments that are more conducive to every kind of learner and helping other kids see that too. Because a lot of times what happens with children with learning differences is that they are set apart because they are moving and everyone else is not. And that becomes something that we attach a stigma to, or that's not what's expected. So in normalizing movements, we are immediately making our classrooms more inclusive. I would say that on the other side of that, some more sophisticated steps, and you know, this is probably geared towards administrators or curriculum developers, is that I think that we as educators, even me as a parent, I want to know why I'm doing something. If I know why I'm doing something, I'm more apt to do it. If I have that why, and that why moves me. So for example, a study was recently published that looked at using a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, or fMRI machine, looking at 2-year-olds who are exposed for long periods of time to iPads and phones, and 2-year-olds who are not. And the 2-year-olds who have more exposure to digital devices actually have differences in the functional connectivity in their brain. It's not as good as the kids who aren't on iPads and digital devices all day. So me as a parent, knowing that, when I read that study, actually, Steve, I started a whole plan to cut down the iPad time, which was hard because it was a pandemic.
You bet.
So,
you bet.
You know, so like, but if teachers and administrators, if you know what movement can do for the brain, I think you're more apt to take those steps and to learn more. So what I would say that in that kind of upper echelon of what we do, it has to do with professional development around the foundations, the biophysiological foundations for learning, reflexes, the brain, the spine. Teachers aren't generally learned in these areas because it's not something we've been exposed to. So that would be my recommendation.
Yeah. In other words, let's educate the educators and then let them use what they learned to serve kids in the best ways that we can.
Absolutely.
Last question. I'm wondering if you'd give some thoughts on what should we be doing as educators to support the parents of students who have learning differences.
I think, you know, parents are constantly overwhelmed with all these things, and in your mind, you're always also thinking, what can I do better? What can I do more? So I always look for things that are easy to do, because I think that we get more compliance or more willingness if it's not an extra thing. So this is a really cool idea that came out in my dissertation from Andy Daly Smith. He is an expert in movement, learning, and cognition in schools in the United Kingdom. And he talked about replacing all homework with movement homework. But I think that for me, in taking small steps, that if you don't give homework, maybe call it something else and give your parents and your families kind of an expectation that the child comes in and talks about what they did at home over the weekend or during the week that had a movement focus. You know, we often tell our parents, read at home with your child 20 minutes every night. What about move at home with your child for 20 minutes every night? So taking a walk and taking data on that, you know, there's a lot of curricular connections that you can do with movement homework. Making a family outing on the weekend that has to do with movement, doing things inside of your home that have to do with movement. So I think that having homework expectations related or that include movement would be amazing for families. Something that I haven't talked about, but like the actual science around movement is that, you know, if you take a 20-minute brisk walk, or if you jog, or if you involve yourself in some physical activity that gets the heart rate going, there are positive neurochemicals that are being created. And that mood enhancer, that natural mood enhancer, lasts for like 4 to 6 hours. So, you know, when we move, and if we kind of help our families do that, we're really creating a great positive mental environment.
Yeah, my mind's just running to us for a starter, adding a family movement night at school. We tend to have a reading night and a math night and a science fair night, and a family movement night may be a step in the right direction.
I love it. I think we'll do that at Smart Moves.
Well, Gretchen, thank you so much. Would you share with folks the easiest way for them to connect to you with questions they might have?
Absolutely. You can definitely email me at Gretchen@smartmovesacademy.org. We also have a Facebook page, Smart Moves Academy Tampa. And then coming soon will be our website, which will have a lot of educational resources too and things for parents to do.
Well, Gretchen, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed connecting with you and learning, and I'll look forward to us repeating a podcast after the school is up and open, and you've got some of the great stories of what kids are experiencing to share with us.
Absolutely, and I'll bring a parent and a teacher and a student along.
Oh, I'd love it. Let's make that a definite plan. That would absolutely be perfect.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud on iTunes and Podbean. And please remember to rate and review us on iTunes. I also want to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.